Welcome, everyone, to Renegade Radio. I'm your host, Andy Lowe. We are brought to you today by Renegade Concepts and the good folks here at Business Radio X. And as always, we are going to be digging into business topics and talking about how you can improve and grow your business. However, we're going to talk about breaking the rules of conventional thinking. And remember, that is where success and opportunity truly lies, is outside of those conventional norms. My guests today that are joining me are going to be Bob Vail. He is from Clear Star Logistics, and we've got George Horrigan from Fountainhead Consulting Group. George, Bob, welcome to the show today, guys.
Thank you, Andy.
Bob, I want to start with you a little bit, and let's get into Clear Star here, and I want you to tell us a little bit about Clear Star Logistics. What do you guys do?
Clear Star is a background screening company. We primarily serve communities that require large-scale technology integration into their onboarding process, into their screening process. We perform every facet of the background screening process, from not only the technology, but providing the services or providing compliance assistance, helping our clients with safe hiring programs, assessment testings, anything along the nature of ensuring that they hire safe employees.
Well, maybe you can expand that a little bit for us. I want to play dumb here, like I don't know a little bit about your business, and just say, okay, so I'm going to hire somebody. I mean, I understand I can run a criminal background check or whatever, and a lot of those things can be done online. What's the service and the real value that you guys bring to the table to make sure that I get the right people in?
Well, strictly from the background screening environment, there are several steps that we perform and ensure that the employer is aware of. The first step in hiring or doing screening and hiring is establishing a safe hiring program. That is a procedure and process that is accepted by the company that would be doing the hiring, that the type of employee they want to hire, what they will accept from a background screening, what areas they want to explore. For example, if they're a financial person, they would want to run a credit report. But if they're a dock worker or a driver, a credit report isn't necessary, so they don't want to expose themselves to that risk. Also, they would then set requirements of what was an acceptable record. So no employer is going to deny a hire because of a misdemeanor record, but if there's a felony record and they specifically state in their safe hiring process that they won't hire felons, then they would exclude that person.
What are some of the dangers you've seen out there that companies have experienced from not running a background check? And I'm sure I see your mind searching because there's a lot of them, but maybe pick a couple that really stand out.
Well, the problem is it's a reactive process, right? Background screening is not considered as assessments or team building is considered a proactive process. Background screening is a little reactive. It's a cost. So a lot of companies go through the motions, but don't actually go through a quality process where they're trying to just let the right people in. We see misunderstanding in the use of records. People don't screen deeply enough. They go through a process where they just do a minimal amount of national screening, and then they don't go to the state level or they don't go to the county level where all the records are really kept, is at the county level and where you really want to drill down to. And then there's a lack of understanding of what those records mean. So we see it in the news every day where people are getting hired with records or haven't been properly vetted, and you have a sexual offender driving a school bus.
What kind of liability issues can come along with that? I mean, I'm just thinking, if I hire the sexual offender driving the school bus, I'm thinking, hey, is that a liability on the school, and to what extent?
Well, it is, and that's what's the importance of the safe hiring program, where there are stated procedures and processes that the school goes through, and then finding a trusted third party, which is the service we provide, who not only understand the compliance and the requirements under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, but also understand the quality of the records that are being utilized and the best way to use those records. When companies try to perform the task themselves or buy a cheaper record and don't have a well-established policy, there's just a lot of cracks in the system.
And you've got a pretty extensive background in the nature of investigation, don't you?
I started out in security is what I've done my whole life. I started out in the United States Air Force as a security specialist. I was a guest instructor at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. Then I was the manager of loss prevention technology for United Parcel Service prior to starting this company.
And when did you guys start this company?
We started in 1995, actually, as a bulletin board-based company. This was pre-internet. in my basement, and we were serving the security industry with giving security managers a way to buy security products, and then we evolved into the risk mitigation background screening in about 1997, transitioned to a .com in 2000, and we're still doing it today.
Now, what other services do you guys provide? I understand screening is a portion of your business. Are there other things that you guys do?
We also do onboarding, assessment testing. We're starting to get into applicant lifecycle, job board postings. We're slowly evolving into the use of the social media environment and how to track in social media. We have a burgeoning drug screening business, which is probably our fastest growing segment of our business.
Well, let me come back to that social media piece, because we hear a lot about this these days, even companies that are wanting to require maybe a Facebook password, for example, before they hire somebody. I mean, do you guys go in and vet people based on what maybe they've been posting out on their social media?
We don't do that yet. That's why we're exploring it, and that's an area that's really up for grabs. Right now, there are technology tools that act as agents. In other words, pretend to be a human being logging in and checking, that will go out and scan for someone's name and look for keywords that they may have posted. And because that individual posted it willingly and did not password protect or, you know, set a privacy setting on their Facebook file, it's seen as public information. And employers are wrestling right now with how to use that information.
Now, are there different laws, regulations, background information that companies experience when hiring, when they are larger than just, say, an Atlanta-based company? Maybe they have regional offices or they've spread out national?
And that's a good question, because you're still mandated by the states. So in background screening, when you go to apply for a job, the applicant has certain rights under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which is the same act that governs credit reports. The information that is reported to the employer has to also be made available if there is disparaging information or information that would stop the employee from getting a job or the applicant getting a job has to be presented to the applicant, and the applicant has the opportunity to dispute that record. Upon disputing it, the company reporting the record, us, at our cost, would have to go back and re-verify the record, re-verify that individual was in fact that individual, and then create a new report to go to the employer. The challenge there is, depending upon the state you're working in, they have different requirements about not only what and when you notify the applicant, but how the data is reported. So there's a large misconception about the ease of access of data. For example, in California, where they seem to be very progressive about the protection and identity theft protection, when you do a criminal background check on someone, you basically only get their name and a range of date of birth. Social security numbers aren't used. So if I ran somebody with a very common surname in California, I could potentially get 20, 30, 40 people showing records. And then I, as the third party, would have to go back and use whatever mechanisms were available to me to try to ascertain if that was the individual. So in some cases, you may get a record because of a name and date of birth match on an individual that isn't his, and then we would actually have to go back to the courthouse, present permissible purpose, the fact that the applicant is asking us to research it. And in California, a courthouse clerk would have to go and re-verify that information.
So if I'm an employer and I'm looking to do this screening, I'm doing it as people come into my organization. Is it important that I run checks like this or some type of background information over time?
And that's starting to become what's being called, we call it cadence screening, which is a interval-based screening based on jobs. Drivers, we're doing that for. We do a large business in the amusement industry, so ride operators are screened. Schools, we do it for some healthcare facilities where we're checking sexual offender databases throughout the country every month on individuals. And of course, drug screening. A lot of our clients are involved or are governed by the Department of Transportation also, and drivers have a continuous screening requirement.
What does a typical client for you look like? I mean, who uses your service? I mean, is it very large organizations? Is it very small organizations? Is it all over the board?
Well, the way we're set up, it's we're very diverse. we did not get involved as a logistics company in the actual background screening until about 2006. Our primary footprint is we supplied the technology to the companies doing background screening. So we have about 125 background screening companies, to include ourselves, that has a customer base of about 40,000, and we're screening close to 100,000 people a month. So we're probably doing some of the larger footprint screening. And it could be anything from a regionally based company, like a Federated Department Stores style, where they are regional and have components under them, or it could be as small as a mom and pop, where someone opens up a local grocery store and really just hires a person every 2 or 3 months.
So we're talking about an affordable solution for a smaller business.
Absolutely. I mean, when you do a background screening on someone and you're doing good, solid due diligence and good, solid follow-up, and you're checking 7 years of their past residency or employment, and you're verifying their education, and you're verifying their past jobs, you're going into the counties that they lived in or worked in. For a small company to pay over $100 to screen an employee would be out of line. So it's very digestible, yeah.
Okay, well, fantastic. Now, how do you get this message out there? How do you get in front of these companies to say, we have the best solution to help you get the right people in the door? Are you just on a website and you're competing on the electronic market, or do you have another way to engage them?
Today, because we're really relying on that distribution model, we would have those 100 companies are doing that, and some of them are named companies here in Atlanta using our technology, and we're actually back-officing the services for them. Since we've been doing it in 2006, surprisingly, we have some very good brand recognition. And the reason we got involved in it, we were getting companies calling us, asking us to provide the service for them. So we haven't really charged forward yet with a hard marketing campaign. It's been a lot of word of mouth. We've been working on improving our website, and that's been very successful for us so far.
Just one quick note here, because you mentioned, you know, the cadence screening. If a business were to come on board with you and say, hey, I'm looking for some help in some new hires, does it make sense while you're doing that to go back and screen your existing employees, even if they've been with you for a while?
We do that, and it depends. Quite frankly, it depends upon the document that the employees signed when they were hired, and what permissions they gave the employer, and what the, you know, conditions of employment, and what the employer is willing to do. We're working with one company right now in California who's doing just that. They were with another background screening company. They found that their processes were flawed. They actually had some contractors who had records get into a home situation where an event occurred, and they came to us and asked us to rescreen their 100,000 their 100,000 service people. So we are going through a process with them right now where we're revetting based upon a new safe hiring or safe employment contract, and we are going to continue to monitor those contractors.
If someone wanted to get in touch with you about screening either current or new employees and see how you could help them in that process, how would they go about getting in touch with you guys?
Just go to clearstar.net, and then all the contact information is on the webpage.
All right. Can you hang out with us for a little bit longer? I got some more questions I want to circle back to, but I think our next guest will help contribute to those questions. I want to turn to George Horrigan from Fountainhead Consulting. And, George, I'd like to bring you into this conversation, but before I get you involved in questions that I want to tie in with Bob here, let's talk about Fountainhead Consulting. Tell us a little bit about who you are and who Fountainhead Consulting is.
Well, people call us the dream business architecture firm. Because over the last 15 years, we've shown over 1,200 people how to take the business they have and turn that into the business of their dreams. Take the business somebody has this very second and start them down the path of creating the business of their dreams.
Okay, so is that a magic pill? Is it a wand? Do I step inside a booth and transport? What happens here?
Good question. What we've done is we've developed a unique step-by-step methodology that eliminates the guesswork, the uncertainty, the leap of faith, the what do I do next. It's all literally laid out in a structured, systematic approach.
All right, so I'm gonna admit I cheated a little. I knew the answer to that question, but I wanted to hit on that, George, because, you know, coming from the coaching and consulting world, we've got a lot of people in our industry that just, they kind of wing it out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you've got more of a methodology. I mean, do you mind stepping us down into that methodology a little bit and helping our listeners really understand what's some of the framework that you're going to help them work through?
Yeah, it's a five-element, five-building blocks approach called the structure of success, and the foundation of the entire methodology is vision. And that's not an ethereal, fuzzy vision, but instead the vision for your business, where you want to take your business, the destination, the direction, needs to be concrete, specific, detailed, and time-sequenced. So you've got to know, where do you want to take this business? Once you've established that, and that always changes a little bit as the business moves forward, second building block is identifying your business's unique critical success factors. And the concept of critical success factors was developed about 20 years ago. And what the concept is that every single business on the planet Earth has its own unique set of make or break factors, its critical success factors. So, and they're unique to a business, number one. Number two, they are the things that will ultimately determine your business destiny. If you identify these things that are unique to your business and then accomplish those, your business will be successful, period, paragraph. But if you don't identify them, then, of course, then you can't accomplish them. And no matter how much time, money, or talent you throw at the business, it'll never be successful, which is what happened with the dot-com businesses. Billions of dollars wasted because nobody ever figured out the critical success factors. You can't figure them out. You can't accomplish them.
Yeah, I want to pause on that one for just a second, because this is one that caught my attention the last time you were visiting here with us at Business Radio X. By the way, George was on one of our other shows called Right Here, Right Now with Dr. Tim. So if you go to our archives and check out the Right Here, Right Now microsite, you'll be able to hear George's previous interview. But like I said, the thing that caught my attention is, you know, here at Renegade Radio, our little tagline is about breaking the rules of conventional thinking. And one of my foundational principles is that in business, there really isn't a right way or a wrong way. There's just what works and what doesn't work. But you and I kind of agreed there are some universal principles that underlie that right and wrong. Like, for example, I think what we chatted about was comparing a vegan diet to a paleo diet, right? You can argue which one is the better diet, but ultimately that foundational principle is that a human must eat. They must consume nutrition to live, right? So with these success factors, tell us about how you really derive those universal principles, where there may be some changes for the business, depending on the type of business, et cetera, but there's foundational principles that just don't change.
Well, let me take a giant step back in answering that question. Our entire methodology is founded on the principle of win-win. Everything in life should be win-win. And anything that is not a complete win-win is a win-lose, which is less than a win-win. And we apply that to the entire business. And what you want to do is to look at what are the things that you absolutely need to do to be successful in your business. For a typical business, there are between 15 and 25 things that that business needs to do 100% of the time, or as close as 100% of the time as is humanly possible. And those 15 to 25 attributes or success factors or actions or tasks are distributed across the business. We break a business down into six areas. Number one, the vision and leadership. Your vision and leadership for your business determines your marketing and sales. What are you going to sell as a business and how are you going to market it? Your marketing and sales drives or determines your production. How are you going to produce what you're selling and marketing? And those three are the core of the business, the foundation of the business. Your fourth area is the finance and administration area, which is a support function that supports the areas that come before that. Fifthly is your human assets, your personnel, your team, what Bob was talking about. And that's a support area that supports the areas that come before that. And lastly is your information technology area, your internal IT area, which supports the five areas that come before that. So what you want to do is look at your business and say, okay, what are the things that I absolutely positively need to do in each of these six areas to ensure my business will be successful? And that is that whole concept is missed by so many businesses. I would say the vast majority of businesses no one's ever explained that to them and introduced them to that concept. And what happens is a business has limited time, money, and talent. your resources are limited. Even Bill Gates, even Microsoft, resources are limited. So you've got to take a look at your business and you've got to say, what are the things that I absolutely need to do to be successful? And then target your resources at those things.
So out of those 20, 25 things that you're talking about, what are some of the common ones that you see businesses not doing that if they could just, maybe they can't get all 25 right away, but if they could just fix these couple, it would really have significant impact.
The first one is to have a vision for that business. Keep that vision up to date and cast that vision to their target audiences. There are five target audiences, which we say are stakeholders of a business. So that's the number one. Where do you want to take this business? And it's kind of interesting. I was thinking about this over the weekend, and this is related to this question. When you're first starting a business, that vision is paramount. For a larger business, that vision is absolutely, absolutely necessary. But once a small business is up and running, and you kind of have a feel for where you want to take your business, actually the most important thing become your critical success factors. Where am I going to take my resources, my personnel, et cetera, and focus it? And for that smaller business, the two areas, once you have your vision where you want to take your business, are your marketing and sales and production. First common critical success factor is have a systematic marketing approach. Most businesses don't have a systematic approach.
No, they're just kind of throwing dollars at ideas.
Yeah. Either they're not doing anything and they know they should be doing something.
Right.
Or number two is they do something here and they try it one time. Oh, doesn't work. Oh, well, stop that. So it's fits and starts there. Or number three is they've not really laid out a systematic approach. So that would be the first really common one is a systematic approach to how you do marketing. Number two is a systematic sales process. And some people don't quite understand the difference between marketing and sales. Marketing is mass, okay? It's never one-on-one. It's always one, your business being one to many, okay? And it's basically to drive people to your business, to your front door. But you can only get them in the front door with sales. Sales is always one-on-one. And many businesses have very good marketing, but they have terrible sales processes. In fact, I was just at a manufacturing business back on Tuesday, and they have incredible marketing. They only have one salesperson who happens to be the business owner, and we were talking about that you need to develop a systematic approach to your sales. What is the script? What things do you emphasize? What steps do you go through to bring that person in the door? And I met a person they're looking to hire. So that would be the second concept.
Yeah, and to jump on that one for a second, there's some principles in there that are going to apply no matter what type of sales, right? I mean, whether I've got a retail business or whether I have a service business or I sell widgets or I've got an online business or maybe I even got into a network marketing business, correct?
That is exactly correct. And it goes back to that one thing we mentioned before, win-win. We all want to walk away from a transaction and say, I got a good deal. I feel good about this, okay? And if you develop your marketing based upon the win that you're presenting to your customer, and then you're basically doing the same thing, but it's more interpersonal in a sales operation, this is the win that you're going to get by working with my business. For instance, we're looking at putting new windows in our house, replacement windows. And there were two salespeople that came out there. The first salesperson invested a whole bunch more in me, okay, in the conversation, doing research, bringing a installer back to look at our windows. I walked away, and that's, of course, the person I'm going to use, and say, this person was looking out for my best interest. He was looking out for my win. Now, actually, it's a lot more detailed than that, and the specific thing is to understand the goals of your customer. When you understand the goals that your customer is trying to achieve and obtain from this transaction, from purchasing your product, then you're able to develop your marketing around that and your sales around that. And that's what happens with so many business owners, that they don't understand those two concepts. Win-win, how can I present the win that I'm delivering to this customer? And number two is get inside that customer's mind to understand what are the short-term and long-term goals that they are trying to achieve in purchasing my product.
And talking about this win-win and the sales process, how important is the back end of this process? I mean, you know, kind of an analogy that jumps to mind is dating, right? I mean, when people start dating, they're on their best behavior for like the first short period, right? And then suddenly when they're like in, then the effort drops off. And we see that a lot in sales where people are very invested up front. They make the sale and then they're gone. It's as if you never knew them at all,
yeah,
right? How important is that back end?
That is critical. That actually falls into the production area in our methodology.
Okay, lead us into that.
Yeah, and each one of the areas, the six areas of a business, we've developed a formula for each of those areas that has between 4 and 7 elements depending on the area. For instance, the marketing and sales area has 7 elements. The human assets, we were just chatting about with Bob, has 5 elements. The production has 5 elements. The 4th element in the production area is your customer service. Do you have outstanding or mediocre customer service? Now, customer service is a real tricky thing here because many people kind of get confused with customer service.
Well, and everybody thinks they have great service too, right?
Absolutely.
It's the great differentiator for most companies. Oh, we have the best service.
Yeah. So there's two essential things that we do in customer service. Number one is the customer service concept is defining what customer service is. Customer service is everything that takes place up to the sales process. The sales process is not customer service. Somebody that just calls and inquires, first let's use the window. Hey, how much are your windows? Okay. And the person just, let me get back to you. And it's just the receptionist there. That's customer service. It's not sales, okay, because you're not in a sales process there. So that's part of customer service. And then after the sale takes place, the problem resolution, answering questions, resolving problems, invoice issues, that's customer service. So that's the first thing is, what is customer service? It is not the product, okay? It's after the product has been delivered, resolving problems. Number two is the self-assessment. You're exactly right, Andy. Virtually everyone thinks our customer service is fantastic. And we, having worked with 1,200 businesses these last 15 years, we are experts at basically being able to draw out of a person truly what, and we do this in a group setting, okay, so it's not just one person, they're the key people that are involved in a business. What is the realistic assessment of our customer service? Because if you are just fooling yourself, okay, you're not going to get what you want out of your business. If you think, hey, our customer service is fantastic, and it's not, you're not going to get where you want to be.
I'm going to pause here, George, because as we move over towards the human asset piece of this strategy, I want to bring Bob back in here. But before I do, tell us a little bit about your target customer. I mean, who is the business owner out there listening to this that really ought to pick up the phone and call Fountainhead Consulting?
Well, our business is about 85% of our clients run from $500,000 to about $10 million. That's the majority of our clients. We have a number of clients in the $10 million to $100 million. We also have many clients that are just starting their business. We can do absolutely the most for a business that's $500,000 on and up there because our methodology is built for taking that business to the next level. But as far as somebody starting a business, we've developed a systematic approach to how you start that business.
Yeah, I'm going to ask kind of a tricky question here because I've seen this in the past just in my own experience. Do you find that it's better to work with companies that are on the upswing or at least at a plateau, have some resources available, or do you find it hard to work with companies that basically hand you their credit card and go, look, here's my last amount of available funding, save me because I'm going under?
Correct. You know, the crisis situation is always the most difficult there.
Right.
The optimal, best situation is a client that says to themselves, I have a great business, and I know I'm not achieving the full potential for my business. And how can I take this business to the next level? How can I mine this gold mine that I'm sitting on? We have taken our three recent huge turnaround stories. We took a business from $600,000 to $10 million in 1 year. We took another business from $350,000 to $15 million in 3 years. We took a business from zero to $18 million in 5 years. So somebody that has a great concept but just doesn't have the systematic approach to how to take that business and maximize their potential from that business, that is the perfect client for us.
Great point. I'm glad we hit on that because I heard it phrased on a show on TV the other day, and I really liked the analogy. It said, you know, when you're in the kitchen and you smell smoke, it's already too late.
Yes.
And in business, it's like that too. And by the time you smell smoke, it's already too late. So I'm hoping that people are reaching out. But in converse to people reaching out to you, how do you reach your clients? How do you get people? Obviously, if you could sit down with them and walk them through this methodology, it makes a lot of sense. But how do you reach them and get them to sit down and do that?
Well, as far as marketing, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. How do you go to market? How do you get your customers? I mean, obviously, people need this help. How do you get them to sit down and hear about it?
In the past, it's come from two sources. Number one is we have a full-service CPA firm, Horrigan & Company CPAs, which I own also. And the vast majority of clients that are Horrigan & Company clients have said, hey, I want this business planning. Number two is I'm a professional speaker. And as I speak to audiences and talk about the issues that are troubling business owners, what business owners want from their business, their dreams, their hopes, their expectations, that resonates with clients there. And so that's the majority is from speaking and then from Horrigan & Company clients.
People want to find out where you're speaking and maybe come see you in person, or they just want to reach out because they already know, hey, I need some help in my business and I'm ready to take a systematic methodology approach to my business. How do they get in touch with you, George?
Our website is GOTO, as in go to FCG, as in Fountainhead Consulting Group.com. GOTOFCG.com. Our phone number is 770-642-4220.
And also, if they want to see your book, where can they find that?
Yeah, we haven't chatted about that, but that's the next marketing. Is I've written two books in the past, and I just finished my third book and my fourth book. My third book comes out this year, and the title of that is Thriving Businesses. Thriving Businesses, and the subtitle is How to Create an Immensely Profitable Business in 7 Easy Steps there. And there will be a link on our website, on GOTOFCG's website, to an actual separate website for the book. The book's due out the beginning of 2013.
Well, let's weave some of the components of that book back in here so we bring Bob back into the conversation because I'm sure they're in there. And let's talk about this human asset piece. So, I mean, what are some key pieces here if you want to run a successful business to getting the right people on board? And by right people, I want to kind of phrase this before we go into the question. We've heard so many people come through the studio in the recent past that have really talked about getting away from this idea of who has the right skill set, because a lot of people have the skill set. But if people don't fit the company, if they're not the right culture fit, it's not going to be a long-term success. What do you guys think about that?
Well, there's been several books written on that, and I think Richard Branson in his book probably stated it best, where he said he stopped evaluating people based on their acumen skill set, and he started to determine whether they were virgin people. You know, were they fun loving? Were they honest? Did they have?
We should point out here that Virgin is his company.
Company.
You don't have to be a virgin to be successful.
Right.
Okay, just want to make sure we're clearing that up.
Though when we start, we all feel that way. You know, do they have, are they disciplined people? So fun-loving, disciplined, do they enjoy what they do? And he's been very successful at qualifying his people that way and then finding people under that cultural umbrella that had expertise or training them in levels of expertise. And we found the same thing in our business. You know, initially, when you start in a small entrepreneurial environment, it's usually you and your friends. You know, you kind of seduce your bank teller to be your accountant, and you know, your dad or mom helps you fix up the basement. And because you had the idea, and there were people around you when you had the idea, they're either your partners or they become your constituency to help you. But then, as time goes by and the business matures, and the vision expands, and the requirement for operational integrity or demands and your customer base starts to evolve, your culture gets challenged. And then you find yourself reinventing your culture or seeking a culture. And that's the most difficult part. It's really not just the evolution of the vision or your technology or the structure of your company. It's getting that culture to follow along based upon the new horizons or based upon the demands of your customers.
Yeah, like John Maxwell said, if you're leading and nobody's following, you're not really a leader.
Or you have the wrong people.
So step us back, George. Jump in here.
Yeah, let me answer that question from two aspects. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, there are five stakeholders of every single business. No matter how large or how small business, you've got these stakeholders. Number one is your customers. Number two are your employees. Number three are your owners. Number four are suppliers or vendors. And number five is society. All businesses operate in the context of a society, of civilization. So you've got to make sure that you're providing a win to them.
And even more so, as social media has proliferated, you know, the environment, right? Because we're able to find out more and build a stronger relationship with companies than before.
Correct. Correct. So what we've done is when we've looked at these win-win factors, these stakeholders, people that have vested interest, most business owners unfortunately start their business with one stakeholder in mind, and that's themselves, which is the third stakeholder, the owner. What we've discovered is that if you actually provide a win-win experience to your customer, you have about an 85% success ratio. If you provide a win-win to your employee, you have about an additional 15% success ratio. 15 plus 85% is 100%. If you truly are providing a win-win experience to your customer and your employee, you are guaranteed to be successful. The owner, as the third stakeholder, just comes along for the ride. Now, why is that important? We're talking about a team. We use the concept of team. You mentioned Richard Branson and the people melding together. I think it's actually bigger than that. Are you putting together a team that will function in that win-win environment for your employees? And we were chatting before about the formula. The formula for the human assets area has five elements. Number one is, the first one is correct personnel. Do you have the correct personnel on board? And that gets back into employee screening. That gets back into do the people have the correct temperament? Culture and the employees a correct match.
Yeah, let me pause you there for a second too, because you know, Bob, you brought up something. You talked about assessments at this point in the game. Do you guys provide us? I mean, obviously, security stuff I get, but tell us about the assessment stuff that you do and how it plays in specifically to this point that George is making over here. Are there some assessments that can really help determine that culture inside of your organization, or is that more of an outsource role?
Determine your culture is debatable. There are batteries of assessments where companies, and we use different products, you can come in and baseline a culture, baseline your top performers, and then when prior to hiring, have someone take the same test to see if they are in line with your top performers. And those are the analytics. I mean, anytime you look at a culture, you can measure certain parts, and assessments are certainly a proactive way to do it. And that's kind of the science. But I think also what we're looking at is the art. There's a portion of interpretation. There's a portion of reactiveness and leadership and the ability to change that assessments really can't do for you. They can start you. They can give you a good baseline. But then it really is up to the manager or the leader of the company to set the tone and the pace. And they need help doing that.
So how do you wrangle the art, George?
Well, Bob, you're exactly right. The first element of the formula just walks you through, the remaining elements walk you through this process. Number one is, do you have the correct personnel? It looks at your skill sets, it looks at their temperament, it looks at their philosophical bents. Number two is, are you managing these human resources properly? Are your managers skilled in drawing the best from your employees? Number three is, are you creating an environment that has high morale and satisfaction level? So getting the correct people on board is great, but if you've got poor managers that don't have the management skill set, squash their employees, don't motivate their employees, and if you don't have the proper morale and satisfaction level, people dread coming into work. They say, oh, Sunday night, oh, I had to go in there Monday morning. I hate that. There are tons of things that can be done to create an environment that has great morale and satisfaction level.
And it's not always money. I want to point that out.
Oh, absolutely.
In fact, that's usually the least effective mechanism.
Correct. Okay. As I mentioned, I've got two books coming out. one book this year, Thriving Businesses, and another book next year. The title, that's Work Less, Make More, and Have Fun in Your Business. Work Less, Make More, and Have Fun in Your Business.
Yeah, I'm wanting you to speed up the process on that one, because I think that's going to be a good one. Can you bump that up a little
bit? Yeah. But in that book, I get into, in the human assets chapter, motivators and non-motivators. And I spell out three motivators and non-motivators. And a non-motivator, one of them is compensation, and another one is fringe benefits. Okay, what do I mean by that? When a person has adequate compensation, if you increase their compensation, you're not going to get better performance. You'll get a little bit of performance, but if you doubled somebody, somebody's earning $70,000, and you raise it to $140,000, their performance will not double. You may get 3% or 5% more output. If compensation is not there, then adequate compensation is not there, then their performance will go down. But once it's there, it's a satisfier. It doesn't take them to the next level. But there are true motivators, and one of them is a team environment where people say, I love going to this place. When I come into work, I'm energized. I love working with Andy. I love working with Bob. I love making our customers' life better. I love impacting society. So if you're creating that team environment, which is that part of that morale and satisfaction level, and there are a number of factors in here, you're going to get the most out of your employees. And then the fourth element is training. So you've got the correct employees, you manage them correctly, you've got a great morale and satisfaction level, but you're not providing adequate ongoing training, you're not going to get the most from your team. And then lastly, the fifth element is leadership. Are you as a business owner leading your human capital, leading your human assets the proper way? Are you cheering them on? Are you saying, okay, that's the hill we're going to take? That's what we're going to be doing as a business. And that is actually different than your managers.
Well, I want to hit on something right there real quick as we near the end of our show here. And that is talking about that leadership piece, because I know this is one of your success steps through your program. And maybe you can just touch on it briefly. But talk to us about how important it is for a leader to invest in themselves and their own personal growth and development if they're going to successfully lead a company.
That is absolutely a key. And I actually talk about there's a whole chapter that's dedicated to that in the second book, Work Less, Make More, and Fund Your Business. A business owner has to take a step back and say, okay, what do I want to do with this business? What does success look like to me? What is the destination? And you can really only do that by having input from additional sources, okay? And there are actually five input sources that you can tap into. And as you tap into there, you're basically investing in yourself. You're expanding your mind. You're expanding your horizon. And as you expand your horizon, then that will filter back into the business. You'll say, oh, I attended a seminar, and that's what John Smith is doing with his business. Or I heard this tape or this CD about this new concept. Yeah, we could do that in the business there. And as you allow that to become part of you as a being, not just like putting a raincoat on, but it has to be part of you as a person, then you're going to be able to lead your company to the next level. And that's what we said. We just mentioned Richard Branson. He's one of those type of people. There are many leaders of your Fortune 500 companies that are truly leaders because they're saying, okay, this is where we're going. We're going to take that hill, and this is new information that's coming into the marketplace that I have discerned and integrated into myself. Unfortunately, many small business owners don't understand that concept.
Well, let's round out today's conversation with that, and maybe you guys can share with us, because obviously our thought here is about being business renegades and getting away from some of those conventional norms. Maybe share with us something for our listeners that you guys have implemented or experienced, and it could be personally, it could be inside of your business, but something that you found success in one of these areas, but is kind of against what maybe the masses think, the conventional norms and the lemmings going over the cliff.
What we've done against conventional wisdom?
Yeah.
Probably everything.
We're gonna need another show.
Yeah, we would have. Yeah, we've pretty much done everything. We're pretty unique in the way we've handled ourselves. There's a couple points, I guess, that make us unique that And I can play off of some of the things George said. We thrive in what I would call, and the team thrives in an adversarial environment. When we have a hill to take or we have a challenge, specifically if we have a competitor who says we can't do it, or we have a timeline where a customer needs us to do it, is probably when we're at our highest performance level because we bond together. You can tell when the pizza boxes are stacked up at the door, we're having a good time because that's when we seem to come together, and that's the whole environment that we do well at. But another thing, again, to play off something George said, and the reason I'm going to use a little bit of time because it's incredibly important, the biggest challenge an entrepreneur has in getting up on top of the trees and looking at the horizon is guilt. He's involved in his day-to-day process. He's involved in, you know, the toil. He's the ditch digger. He's the programmer. And when he tries to separate himself to see the vision, he feels guilty that he's not back down in the ditches, and he wants to get back down involved. And it's incredibly important that he finds a support system where there is an individual or a group of people saying, look, it's okay for you to go here. It's okay for you to look a little bit further. It's okay to change your process. If there's a critical success factor, that's it.
Yeah, and I really agree with and identify with that one. I've always talked about some of the triathlon training stuff I do and how these little lessons tie in, and there's a real good one that exactly parallels that, and it's the rest and recovery process. Sometimes people feel guilty that they're not out there training, but sometimes you need a rest moment. You need the recovery moments, but the critical thing here in business is that you've got to make sure that you've worked hard enough to deserve a break. Oftentimes people want to take a break before they've ever done enough work to really justify the need to recover, right? George, how about you?
Yeah. Before I get to that, I just want to dovetail on something that Bob mentioned. What we call that syndrome that you mentioned is the tyranny of the urgent syndrome. And business owners fall into that all the time. They just get wrapped around the axle. I just have to be busy in my business. And the reason they end up doing that is twofold. Number one is it's a default mode. But number two is there's this concept of productivity. They get trapped in this. I've got to be doing something. Planning is not something that you see tangible results. You know, am I sitting down and doing a 3-year plan or a 1-year plan? Well, if I just do another sales call or if I just spend this time organizing the warehouse there, I can see something tangible. Unfortunately, they're getting trapped in the tyranny of the urgent, working in the business versus on the business. Mm-hmm. As far as non-conventional, one non-conventional thing that I think is so key is, we were chatting before, sales and marketing is, besides your vision, the most important thing for a business. And unfortunately, most people, when they put together their marketing and sales methodologies, if they do put ones together, ask them to just try whatever there, they look at their customer, and we draw this out by asking them, why do your customers purchase your products? And most people say, well, because of wants and needs. And we say, that's exactly true, but it's actually much deeper. People make purchase decisions, that's every one of us, Bob, Andy, George, Fred, Tom, because of our perception that this product is going to enable us to reach our short-term and long-term goals. And if you take a step back and say, okay, I've got product X, bottled water, or microphones, or whatever, and say, what is the short-term and long-term goal this person is really trying to accomplish with this? It opens a whole new kimono, a whole new universe of how you're able to connect with your customer. So my conventional, non-conventional tip would be, take a step back, look at your product, and ask, what is your customer truly trying to accomplish in purchasing your product, both short-term and long-term, and then build your entire marketing and sales around that concept.
Great advice, guys. Bob, one more time, if people want to get in touch with you at ClearStar, how do they get some information and find out if you can help them?
The best way to get a hold of us is at clearstar.net or 1-800-30-CLEAR.
Fantastic. George, if they want to get some business help and get in some of this methodology and step-by-step success, how do they do it?
Fountainhead Consulting Group's website is GOTO, as in go to, FCG, as in Fountainhead Consulting Group.com. GOTOFCG.com, and our phone number is 770-642-4255. 770-670-642-4220.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for being on the show today. I think you shared some great advice for our listeners. And in fact, I feel like we've only scratched the tip of the iceberg here for what we could really get into. But thank you for the contributions for sure.
My pleasure.
Everyone listening, we appreciate you tuning in to Renegade Radio, and we hope that you'll tune in every week as we take some non-conventional wisdom and try to turn it into success habits in your business. Remember that opportunity lies in the impossible, but you have to be willing to break the rules of conventional thinking. Until next time.